Hey, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now, my shit together is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Powell, rookie on the board. S&P futures, we were up last night pretty good. Now we're not so much this morning. S&P's down 9, Nasdaq futures down 61. Like I say, we were trying to bounce last night from a crapo day yesterday. Yesterday, the S&P's were down 76, Nasdaq down 445. That was almost 2%. So we were doing the bounce last night, and now we're not even bouncing. It's not even a dead cat bounce, Ricky. What the hell? What do you think? Should be at least a dead cat bounce. Anyway, we will see what happens today. We've had some hits this week. I'm trying to take a look at what the crypto is doing. Bitcoin's down 459, still over 100,000 to 100,500 in the Ether, which has got to take a huge Ethereum, as Kevin would say, as everybody else says except me, is down 1% to $38. So I wonder what's going on in there. Oh, nothing. But looks a little weird to me. Do we have Kevin? Do we have Mike Murphy?
Yeah, you have both of us on. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning to both of you also.
As they say in the South Side, we got the boat of them?
Got the boat of us, yeah.
Yeah.
A question. What kind of a person starts bouncing dead cats around?
Yeah, I don't know where that term came from, but it was a serious floor term. Ah, it's a dead cat bounce, evidently.
Yeah,
no.
I've heard it in lots of venues. I know it, but I'm sitting here thinking, who came up with that?
I have no idea.
You pick up your dead cats and see if they bounce?
I have no idea. It's been around. I heard it the first day I was on the trading floor. The market bounced a little bit. So it's a dead cat bounce. I'm like, where the hell did he get that? But it's old. I don't know if it's an oldie but a goodie, but it's old. Let's put it that way. So, Mike, how are you?
Great, Tom. How are you doing?
All right. Hey, before we're going to talk more about that because Mike is a serious veteran, a retired veteran from the armed services. Hey, you know, Dave, our buddy Dave Murphy, the other Murphy, what is he, Murphy the Lesser, or is he Murphy the Greater? I don't know. He's one of the Murphys. Dave is a very good friend of ours. He's from California, but we try not to hold that against him. He, high school coach for a long time, really knows his stuff. Terrific guy. And he was mentioning last week, we were watching one of the games, and it came up that a lot of the players were kind of chippy. And do the coaches even control these guys now that they're making all this money? I mean, it's got to be an interesting dynamic that the old-time coaches probably don't even understand. And Dave sent us a text or message. We all bother each other by sending stuff back and forth and letting us know we're all still alive and fighting. He said something about he went to a high school game where the high school team was the number one in the country and how the high school players were all so chippy and mouthing off to each other and how they're all making so much dough. Who exactly is paying the high school players? I mean, the high schools can't be. I mean, do you guys have any idea what the dynamic is? And we've talked about it on the show from time to time because I knew some people here. I know some people who's had a buddy who had a kid who was already making money as a senior year going to a certain college. And is it kids getting paid in high school because they're already committed to a certain college? So the sponsor's already paying them, or the high school's paying. Do you guys have any idea where it's all coming from?
Oh, who knows? It could be local. You've seen that TV commercial where they're doing graduation, and they announce the kid's name as the business name because the parents sold the naming rights to their child to a local business. You haven't seen that commercial, have you?
No, I guess I'm lucky.
It's on all the time.
It also could be a local booster club, for all that matters. Kevin makes a valid point, and it could be the college collective. I mean, who knows?
What does anybody care what high school somebody goes to? Or am I just being old here?
Well, Dave tracks the high schools in California closely, and the one that he was talking about, I think it's St. John Borromeo. They always have the two schools that he was watching. They always have a lot of nil prospects, more than nil prospects. They may be getting paid already by whatever college they're going to go to.
So you may have some of that, but you also there's a real fanaticism about high school football in some quarters. You probably don't see it as much in the Chicago area and suburbia and so on. You probably don't see it as much, although I see it. I know a whole lot of people. I went to Loyola in Wilmette in the north suburbs of Chicago, and there are some people still in my class all these years later who are very hardcore Loyola football fans, and I'm sure they donate to the program and so on, and some of them are former teammates of mine when I played, who have done very well for themselves, and they like to support not just the school but also the athletic programs. But get out to, for instance, I lived in St. Joseph, Michigan for a little over 5 years. The biggest, most prominent structure in the town is the high school football field. It's a big deal. Right next door, Lakeshore District, Lakeshore High School. I mean, they're doing, they have fireworks shows after every score, all that kind of stuff. And it's like the town closes down. I was one of the few people who wasn't at the St. Joseph High School football game when I lived there. But I would get there by halftime because my son was in the marching band. So I would get there for the marching band performance. I remember having someone look at me and go, "Oh, you're one of those parents, huh?"
But I could see, fireworks show today sponsored by PTI Securities. It doesn't mean I want to pay the left tackle.
No, but once you start pumping money into the program, then you may start doing that. Do I think that they're making, hundreds of thousands of dollars? I doubt it. But there is, there's a certain craziness, especially when you get away from the big cities. And I think you'd do the same thing. If you looked at high school football in Texas, good Lord, they may be making the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands.
I'm just curious about a bunch of things. I mean, the kids, not that anybody shouldn't get what they can. I mean, I guess you that's always what you should do. But I'm just curious on the Mike, I know you listen to the show a lot. My theme always seems to be that every subject sort of runs into some other subject, which you don't really see in normal news. Is this somewhat of a phenomenon that some people, a lot of people, are checking every price in the grocery store, and some people have so much money they can't wait to play the left tackle on the high school team? I mean, do we call it a K-shaped recovery? Has it reached that stage? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is if I was, PTI Securities, I don't know if it would be worth it for us, but if I was a real estate company in Orland or someplace doing the fireworks show at the baseball team out there, the Thunderbolts or whatever the hell they are, doing that and having my name up there might be considered good PR.
Just like the fireworks show where I live, small lake, but we have local sponsors, local businesses kick into the fireworks show because it's just it's a form of advertising, and when we send out the flyers, we say thanks to these sponsors, please do what you can to patronize them. So,
but I know as I was not a marketing genius.
That's one thing, but being the booster for I don't relate to it very well. I'm telling you what I observe, but I'm not telling you I relate to it personally because I don't. But I do think you have a lot of people who just want to be really involved. And then you get, in the city, this has always been true in Chicago for the basketball players. There's a whole lot of people who try to latch on to some of these high school basketball stars, figuring that, if they stay close to them, they can ride the wave, and when they become big NBA stars someday, they'll be at least part of the entourage, if nothing else.
Well, the question...
That's been true in the city of Chicago for a long time.
The question I'm stumbling to get to here, which is common, it seems, I'll ask Mike, is it good business investment, or is it psychic income?
I think it's probably both. You know, and Kevin just talked about Texas. I mean, Friday Night Lights,
yeah,
that book was written probably 40, or not 40 years ago, 20 years ago. And it described the attitude in Texas very well. And I think it applies to Southern California, too, because the kids there can play all year, as in, you know, Southern Texas. Maybe not all year in Texas, but pretty close to it. So I think it's a fanaticism that, you know, Kevin described it pretty well.
Well, if the three of us, if somebody beamed us into the boardroom of, say, Under Armour, and we were given a complete review of all the money they spend on this stuff that they paid Hartman, what, $1 million, you know, what do you think the review would show? Is it worth it? Is it not worth it? Do you not know? I mean, I'm always... The thing that... I was on a chairman of the marketing committee.
Well, they wouldn't be doing it, Tom, if it wasn't worth it.
I'll push back on it a little bit. When I was on the CBOE, I was chairman of the marketing committee for a while, and the president of the place was a terrific guy named Chuck Henry. He goes, you know, Tom, one of the principles of marketing is, you know, you're wasting half of it, you just don't know which half. And some of that is kind of true. And some of the things you do, like we sent out mailers, trying to get people to come to seminars and so forth. The mailers were really, they were too nice, actually. They were like a couple bucks a piece. We sent out like, I don't know how many thousand of them. We bought all these lists and everything. And we got like no response. And whenever we did radio ads, we being the CBOE, we got zero response. But when we sent out the mailers and ran the radio ads at the same time, we got a huge response. Because when we actually tricked them, I mean, in terms of caught interest, but there's no way to write a phone number down or anything when you're driving. So the idea that the mailers showed up the same day, you never really knew what you were getting. But I'm saying, does Under Armour think that the $1 million for Hartman was a good piss away of $1 million or not? I have no idea, do you?
I won't speak specifically to Under Armour and what they think, but I will speak to, if you just look at the overall enterprise. So let's just say that Under Armour is just an extension of Notre Dame football. Now, my personal opinion is Hartman wasn't worth it. You know, he was good, he wasn't great, but that, we'll leave that out of the equation.
But was he worth it to Under Armour? I don't care what he was like on the field.
Yeah. So, but let's, you know, let's just leave the let's say he could, if he were really good, and if he led them to the playoff or national title or something like that, certainly there's the performance, and we always look at that with athletes, don't we? You know, do they live up to the contract? So that's part of it. But look at the overall enterprise and start saying, well, even if I, first of all, if you look at the marginal cost of having athletes in school versus the fully loaded cost, which is often what they use from accounting purposes, is the fully loaded cost. Marginal cost is very small of having an extra 85 people in school. So you know, that's barely a cost. And then you look at what else they're getting paid, and then compare that to an NFL payroll, and you know, and say, okay, you know, you can look at the revenue streams. It's probably not as quite the revenue stream that you would get from an NFL franchise, but it's not nearly the payroll. It isn't even close to the payroll that they get. So I would say, if you look at it from that standpoint and compare it to other sports, sports.
Yeah, but you're not getting a $250 million check from the networks in college like you do
in
pro.
But Notre Dame's getting something like, $30 million or something like that for football from NBC.
Well, I mean, because, obviously my job, man, is to invest money for people. If you look, when do you say this all started, Mike? 20 years ago? I mean, if you look at the stock performance of Under Armour, Nike, New Balance, who's the other guy, Adidas, those companies have not done that well since this all started. I mean, I'm sure they all wish that they never got involved in this. I mean, it becomes competitive on the schools and stuff, but I don't know that the amount of money that Nike poured into Oregon has ever returned any money from Nike. The guy just liked Oregon. I mean, it returned some.
You're right, Tom, but it really paid off for some of them, like with LeBron James and with some of the kids that went to Duke. You know, Sonny Vaccaro he's probably been doing it or did it for 30 years. And, you know, so it does pay off occasionally. And you know, LeBron has his posse and all those. He's been carrying, whether it's 10 people or 5 people, for his entire life. So, you know, in some respects, it does pay.
Well, I mean, obviously it paid for Nike to do Michael Jordan, but to pay some high school kid who's nobody knows who the hell he is to put his name on a shoe, really? I mean, from a business point, I wonder, I bet if they all got in a room, every one of the chairmen would say, this is nuts. I mean, and collectively, it's probably not worth it. I mean, people are still going to buy shoes.
You're right, but I don't think it matters to them. This is probably what you're talking about, that psychic income. So.
Yeah, all right. Hey, Mike, you've been listening all week. We covered I Can't Believe What a Good Job Dr. Mark Did. Well, actually, I do believe it. He's good at that stuff. I am stunned that Kenny is part of that group, not that Kenny doesn't do stuff like this, that raised all that money. And obviously, I know what Diane does, and we seem to have a group of people that are connected with the show that are really connected to the veteran stuff. And then even Andrew yesterday was talking about the changes he's seen recently in the personnel down in Florida where Wayne goes. What's your summary of the week?
Before we do that, Mike, I did the same thing with Mark yesterday too. Would you give the listeners just some background of your military service, just so, because I think that'll provide a lot of context.
Yep. Well, plus, we haven't been on for a while, so people, how can anybody forget you, Mike? But people might not have seen you when you used to be on a lot more. But anyway, go ahead, do that, please.
All right. I am a career Army officer, and I was a military intelligence officer and a foreign area officer. My foreign area expertise was Western Europe, and I am a German linguist, and I went to what is called the Defense Language Institute out in Monterey, and then I was stationed for 2 tours in Germany. My first tour was in Munich, second tour was in Heidelberg, working at the United States Army Europe. And then I retired in Germany, and then I was able to get a civilian job with United States Army. Actually, the first civilian job was with the Joint Analysis Center in England. So I've lived in both England and Germany for an extended period of time. And then my last job in the Army was at the National Ground Intelligence Center, which is here in Charlottesville. And I worked there for about 10 years before I retired.
Mike, did you get the stupid question? Did you get to pick German? Because I talked to a lady about 6 months ago and said her nephew picked German, and he ended up having to learn Afghan or something because they had enough people that knew German or something. Did you get to pick your language, or did they pick it for you?
Well, when I was when I enlisted, and Dr. Mark and I have it's because he enjoyed basic training. Essentially, after he had been in for a short period of time, he came back to Florida. We hung out together, and I was the policeman in Delray Beach, Florida, and I was kind of getting sick of working 3 shifts a month, and so I enlisted. And when I enlisted, I supposedly had a promise of the German language that was in my contract. And then after that, I was supposed to go to officer candidate school. Well, I had to kind of fight the system. They sent me to the Defense Language Institute for German, so I did get that aspect of it, but they were kind of hemming and hawing on the officer candidate school. So I had to appeal to the Department of the Army to make sure that I got into officer candidate school. And at the time, my sister was stationed at Fort Benning, and she received a copy of the list when I was selected for officer candidate school, but the Army didn't tell me. But because I knew Mary had already got a copy of the list, I knew I had made it. So then I really fought the system a little bit. So it all turned out very well.
So you essentially got the language you picked. You didn't pick French and ended up with German.
I picked German and I got German.
Good. Okay, great. So go ahead, keep going.
Oh, and then, you know, I went to officer candidate school and, you know, graduated on the commandant's list and then went out to, once you're commissioned, you have to go to your branch, and my branch was military intelligence, and the basic officer course was located at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, and Gene and I went out to Arizona. That was about a six-month course, and then first assignment was in Munich. And actually, my first assignment was supposed to be in Dusseldorf, Germany, but the guy that was my company commander, he changed the location from Dusseldorf to Munich because he needed an executive officer for his company. And that's what I ended up doing for quite a while. I was in Munich for about 4 years, not all of which was the executive officer of the company.
The place in Arizona, that's right near Phoenix, right?
No, it's about 60 miles from Tucson, and it's very close to the border.
Okay.
In the Nogales area. So we could take a quick trip to Nogales easily, actually.
There's one in Phoenix, too, right? Because there was a listener on the show, he told me he was at that base, he retired, and he actually had a couple of houses. He was renting on Airbnb. We have a listener out there.
Well, Davis-Monthan is an Air Force base. I'm not sure that's near Phoenix, and I'm not sure that there's any Army bases near
Phoenix.
It
might have been the Air Force. Could have been.
Yeah. Davis-Monthan, the graveyard for all aircraft, is actually Davis-Monthan out in Arizona. It's an interesting place to visit because you've got any kind of, or most types of aircraft that the Air Force has used.
So, like, you go see an old B-47 or B-36 or something?
Yeah, and you can climb on them and look at them. Wow. As long as you get permission to do all this stuff.
And you don't fall and break your neck.
Right.
So are there veterans' homes in Europe? Are people that stay there? I mean, are there not veterans' homes, veteran hospitals?
That's, okay, so when, all right, so I retired in Germany at the time, and our community, so the Heidelberg community had what they call a Veterans Administration liaison officer. So I went to that guy to get some advice, and he was good about it, because right when you retire, you receive a physical from the Army, and that's a very important physical, and you have to make copies of it if you're clever. And then I sent all of that to the VA, and then the VA contacted, or they sent a letter, and it actually was to Gene's home address, because that's where I enlisted was, well, I enlisted in Ohio, but we used Pennsylvania as my home of record. Unfortunately, her father didn't send me that letter, but I didn't talk to him either. And you had to go to a consulate or the embassy to actually get your physical from a doctor that the VA had contracted with, and then you could proceed with the entire process of, you know, getting your benefits from the VA. Well, I didn't do that till I retired from the from civil service, and I ended up doing it in Charlottesville, and that's this. All right, I'm switching on you now, Tom, but the Washington Post did a series of articles recently, or one big article recently, about corruption in the VA with regard to benefits. And a lot of people have worked the system well, and when they retired, they essentially get 100% disability or 80% disability. The key with the VA is to get the 75% or more disability, and then you essentially get it's a tax-free income.
So
at
this
that
this,
point.
This physical is to find out if something's wrong with when you left.
That's correct. And for instance,
wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. It's to find out. what injuries you had while you were in service. So a lot of guys that were in armor used to jump off of tanks or hit their head or get concussions. And so they would apply for some benefit. And infantrymen, different things. Artillery guys, it's their hearing usually. That's where it begins. It can be anything. The VA has a, for instance, myself, I had a bad jump one night, actually, and I landed really hard. And I, if varicose veins ran in my family anyways, but I developed pretty bad varicose veins as a result of that. And when I finally did get my VA physical, that's where I got my VA disability from. I got 10% for each leg because I had had surgery on it. I went to the military treatment facility or the clinic at Fort Bragg at the time, and I reported, you know, that I had the injury, and the guy could see that my legs were all screwed up at the time. And that was documented in my records. So one other time, for instance, at Fort Benning, when I was in officer candidate school, they had us out, you know, cleaning the area and things like that. And it was really hot. Well, they made us, for some inane reason, they made us take off our hats because they wanted everybody in a uniform look, because some people wore caps, some people wore like the boonie cap is what we call it. You know, it's just a big broad brim.
You know when Irish guys taking off their hats in the sun.
Exactly. So, but they didn't, or they won't give you anything for sunburn and things like that. And that could be maybe, you know, Vietnam was a remnant of that, or people that got extreme sun injuries, and so who knows. But and I would have liked to have gotten something for that, but I didn't get anything for that because I, you know, I have.
So they essentially put the physical of Mike Murphy when he showed up and the physical when he left, and they try and figure out what the difference is.
That's exactly right, and that's where you get your disability.
But no matter what, you get to go to the Veterans Hospital, right?
That's correct. But as one of your, somebody said, I think Lou said it yesterday, and Mark talked about the waiting lists and things like that. It takes a long time sometimes to get treatment with the VA. But, you know, and I've been down to the Richmond VA hospital here, well, in Virginia, and it's a huge complex. And you end up waiting a long time to get treatment. Now, if I go to the local VA clinic here in Charlottesville, they've been very helpful to me. And that's kind of more for routine preventative maintenance. Like I receive my two shingles shots with them, and I get a regular visit with a doctor once a year or every 6 months or 3 months, whatever I need at the time. Because you have to see the VA at least once a year in order to kind of keep your records intact.
Yeah, my stepfather had to do it. He had a regular doctor, but then whenever he was prescribed something, he'd have to go see the veterans guy to make sure the prescription was right, and then he would get it in the mail a lot cheaper type of thing.
Right, that's exactly right. And the same thing applies here. I could get prescriptions through the VA, but I have opted not to do that because I just get them right at our local pharmacy through the benefits that I have accrued as a career or as a retired Army. Okay, so I'm on Medicare now, but I'm also on TRICARE. That's my supplemental policy. So
what gets you to, I guess you got to be really messed up to be going from messed up.
You have to be hurt.
Okay, that's okay. Mike knows he's messed up.
Well, what I'm saying, but like the one in Maywood now is becoming kind of the regional cancer center. It's also kind of the regional, you're not going to go to the prescription guy to get a new leg done. I mean, that they do that at Heinz. She said the big burn unit's down in San Antonio. You have burn problems.
Big burn unit, and that's an Army thing. It's at Brooke Army Medical Center, and that's where Dr. Mark started out. That's where he had his training, was in San Antonio, and I believe he, as he said the other day, he was assigned there for his first assignment also.
What we started zeroing in on the, and Diane is the one who brought it up, because she, if you're ever in Chicago, Mike, you'd love to meet her. She goes and does the mass every Sunday morning at like 5 o'clock at the VA home, and then wanders around the hospital and gives communion to people who can't make it down to the mass, and talks to all these guys. And she was the one that brought up a lot of the psychological stuff, which brought us to Kenny, which brought us to Mark, which brought us to you. It doesn't sound like, I mean, you must be, and if you, I mean, you must know some people that have issues. Do they get any treatment? Do they not get treatment?
Oh no, they eventually do get treatment. You just have to kind of work the system. It's just like any bureaucracy, and the VA is probably one of our biggest bureaucracies, I think. But I'm making judgments, and I don't want to do that. The VA provides a lot of good to people. And Mark said the other day, you know, the VA really expanded after World War II, helped a lot of people out, and it kind of goes through different crises. Like the Vietnam vets didn't get treated well, and that was but the military in general in the 60s and 70s, we had a bad reputation. It was probably deserved to a degree, and people might not have gotten the treatment that they deserved at the time. So,
well, the fact that you might not like the thrust of what they were doing didn't make an individual's life any better.
No, that's true. But you know, as Mark, I don't know whether he said this or not, but you know, in my Army career, there's a lot of times. There are some times when you question what people are asking you to do, and as long as I thought it was, you know, just if it was in accordance with my moral compass, I would do it. But if I didn't like what they thought or the order that they were giving me, somehow I would try to work around it. Now, that's not right, but fortunately, I never got put in a position where I really had to do something contrary to what my moral compass is.
Kevin, you had a question?
Well, yeah, I do have a question, because for the most part, now you know, obviously involved in intelligence, it's hard to say it's not a combatant role, because you know, it certainly is in its own way, but it's not on the battlefield necessarily, correct?
That's correct. It's a support role, Kevin.
Yeah, and you also have a lot of people who are, you know, who are just in other areas. So we've talked a lot about the transition this week for people transitioning, you know, whether it's out of combat roles, and certainly when you were in Germany, you had to see a lot of that, because I think a lot of people who come out of combat stage their way, their pathway is a stop off in Germany and evaluations there. So I'm interested in your observations about that, but I'm just as interested in your observations of yourself and others who were not in direct combat roles but are still transitioning out of the military. Because as we talk about mental health, if you're 20 years into the Army and all of a sudden it is time to go, I don't think that's always an easy transition for people either, and it creates its own kind of challenges, because even if you're going to go out into the what I would always call the real world, although that may not be a fair assessment either, but even as you're going to go out into that, it's still not the same kind of structure. It's still not the same kind of organization as the Army, and that's not an easy transition for people either. So your perspectives on that and the kinds of things that people making those transitions need.
Okay, the first, I need to describe what you're talking about, Kevin, because with regard to injuries in both Iraq and Afghanistan, what happened to a lot of soldiers in doesn't apply to soldiers, you know, Marines and all that. If you got injured in it on the battlefront, so you lose a limb, or you know, a bomb explodes in your face, which IED, improvised explosives devices, they were very prevalent in both Iraq and Afghanistan. They usually would be evacuated to Landstuhl, which is an army hospital, or it's a joint hospital now, in Germany, and that would be their initial triage place. And Landstuhl, that's one of the two places in Europe that has a Fisher House, and Landstuhl is a very good hospital, and a lot of quality there, and so they would get treated there, and then they would either go to Walter Reed or Brooke, or they would get discharged from there, or they'd go back to the front, and. But the more serious injuries would generally probably go to Walter Reed, and that's in Maryland. And then the other Fisher House, I believe, is at Mildenhall in England.
So if your kid
and that's
was
a big Air Force hospital.
So if your son or daughter was wounded, and you knew they were in that hospital, you could fly from Chicago and stay there while they're in the hospital for a week or two if you wanted to.
That's correct. That's why those Fisher houses were established where they are, okay? And that's, I believe that's the extent of the Fisher House in Europe. And I don't know that there's any, like in Japan or something like that. But Japan, you know, there's sufficient forces in Japan or in the Far East. But I don't know that they've gotten the Fisher House there yet. Okay, so my career, when I transitioned out, I found out like the summer of 1995, and I was getting close to my 20-year mark, but I hadn't reached it yet. And they told me I had to either retire early or take a severance pay. So I opted for the retirement early, and I ended up retiring about 7 months earlier than I would have liked. You know, generally you get to 20 years, but I had to take a slightly early retirement, and I opted to retire in Germany because I wanted to try to stay in the intelligence field. And it worked out for me, but my retirement was slightly reduced. Instead of getting 50%, I ended up getting 47% of my final pay. And then for a while, because Jimmy Carter, and what it's not just they were trying to stop the double dipping, I had to pay my civilian pay was reduced by 10 grand a year. Because that's what you had to do at the time. And I actually had to get a waiver from the Department of the Army in order to get the civilian job that I did receive. And but as I said, it all worked out in the end. And then I was able to make a career as a civilian working for the Army and then get a retirement from that too.
Well, I think Kevin's question had something to do with, more to do with, okay, you're out. Here's the want ads. Are you going to go to work for Google, or are you going to be Walmart, or where are you going? What happens to those guys?
Well, you know, those guys, the Army had a, and they probably still do have a transition program where they kind of teach you how to write a resume, how to interview. And I went through all of those different things, but I really concentrated on trying to continue in the intelligence business because I felt that was my best chance of getting a decent job. And I actually heard from people. I sent out a bunch of resumes, and I heard from some guy. Actually, he was in Western Pennsylvania, and he was willing to help me to try to get a job at a college or a junior college or whatever, because he had just done the same thing. And that kind of worked for a while. I was starting to get some feelers there, but I ended up getting the job as a civilian before that. And the guy that hired me is a guy that I went to the basic military intelligence course at Fort Huachuca. I went, and he ended up hiring me in England to work.
Well, other
for
than
him.
Being, I'm going to say generally a good person, and obviously if you're there, they like you. You must be good at whatever it is you're doing. Lou was unusual because he ended up going to Duke Law School and became a JAG officer. It became easy for him to muster out and be an attorney, obviously. But a regular person, the guys know anything about finance. They know anything about, you know, what Kevin does. I mean, I'm sure you're capable of learning if you're coming out of the Army after 20 years. But
well, I know another guy that I served with in England that he had a comptroller training through the Navy. He went to the Naval Postgraduate School, which is in Monterey, and he received this comptroller training. So now he works as a comptroller for a bank in New
York
City.
There's
so everybody has the different backgrounds, and it's you're still working. It's just, you know, much like you guys, you're still working your personal connections in order to get a job. So both things apply, but all the services have some sort of a formal transition program where they aid you. But you have to be clever enough to use it and then to use your own or develop your own connections in order to get the job and to transition out. But as you talked about, Kevin, or as you were alluding to, it's some people find that process very difficult because, you know, they've been an infantryman their entire career. Well, that doesn't transition well unless you really want to work security or once again go back to the battlefield and work as a contractor. And there were plenty of those jobs in Afghanistan and Iraq that you could go back and do and, you know, and train soldiers and train foreign soldiers for all that matters.
Well, I'm even thinking the transition for people who are in areas like, you know, procurement, logistics, things like that. Still, you know, doing that in the Army is not nearly the same as doing that in industry.
No, and you're exactly right. But let's say, for instance, the logistician that was very famous in Desert Shield and Desert Storm was Pagonis, General Pagonis, and he ended up getting great jobs in industry because of his experience. But he's a big name guy. But
yeah, he's a general, so he's going to get a senior level, you know, a C-suite type of job.
No, you're exactly right. But he will end up bringing along guys that work for him as logisticians also. So, because he would have known who's good from, you know, his own Army career, and then he would end up hiring those guys. So once again, some of it's the personal connection. And, you know, there's a guy that's making some decisions at the Pentagon now. His name is, he's a retired Marine general officer. His name is Tata, actually. And when he was on active duty, he was... and I believe he was at the Pentagon. He was always trying to make the military a little more business-like, and now he's like the deputy chief of personnel for human resources. So he's in an important position now, and once again, they're trying to kind of downsize in a credible manner, and I think they're starting to run into some problems with that because, but I don't. This is all just stuff that I've read a little bit and seen a little bit.
Mike, what's the relationship in terms of benefits and really? And it seemed like the Iraq and Afghanistan, maybe more in Afghanistan, because it took, you know, we were there forever. What is the? I keep referencing when I, as you know, my Italian side's from Columbus. So whenever I was in Columbus, I'd. All around Columbus, every town seemed to have a National Guard unit of some kind. You know, Jeep repair, tank repair, you name it. I don't know if it was tank repair, but guys that did all kinds of stuff. And those whole units were called up and moved to Afghanistan for 6 months and back, or a year, and they were constantly seemingly coming and going. You didn't see hardly any of that in Chicago. There might be some, but it just never hit the papers. What happens to those guys? You know, because now people were getting injured behind the lines. Are those guys, if you're called up for that kind of duty, does that mean you get to go to the veterans home later? Or do you get the same
kind
of...
Oh, yeah. Anybody who has served gets to go to a veterans... It starts at the veterans facility, so the VA hospital or a VA clinic, and then you get the benefit, you know, you're entitled to the medical care there, and then you get into the system.
Now, does that National Guard unit from Ohio have to be called up, or if you just were National Guard Ohio for 10 years and not anymore, do you have any of these benefits?
You do get those benefits, yes.
Really?
Because
even a state National
Guard?
You've
been in the reserves. You know, you made a commitment to the reserves for whatever period of time you were in the reserves, so you're entitled to get that the care through the VA clinic.
So everybody in the National Guard has been through basic training, essentially.
Oh, yes, that's true. They all have to go to some sort of basic training.
And that puts them on another level once you do that. In other words, I couldn't just join the National Guard down at Ford City and just go on weekends in 1 week of summer. I'd have to have some kind of training first.
I think it depends upon what military occupational specialty that you need. But in general, most people go through the normal basic training that every soldier goes through. And I think that same would apply to the other services also. Because that the basic training is the first area or the first type of the training that you get weeded out. So there are several, there are probably not many, but there are a lot of people, and I had some in my basic training, they weren't going to make it, or they didn't make it, and it's for because they weren't in good enough shape, they didn't have the mental capacity for it. They didn't have the right psychological profile, so they get weeded out then, and then they get not an generally it's not an honorable discharge, but it's a discharge that doesn't hurt you in the public realm. And then if you like if somebody murders somebody on active duty, they get it. They generally would get a dishonorable discharge. Well, that one hurts you, so. And then that first discharge that you could get is an expeditious discharge, and that's the one that doesn't hurt you. So, but then there's various types of discharges, and you always want to get an honorable discharge because that gets you all the benefits that you need.
What is these? You hear about, you know, who knows what the press goes back and forth. You hear about these alleged cutbacks in the veterans. Actually, I have two questions. One is that one, if you want to go down that road. The other is that what Diane brought up regarding this Fisher House up at Great Lakes that's unusual, and you and I were kind of texting back and forth on it yesterday, is they actually, that veterans home up, veterans hospital up there, treats people that also are in active duty, because there's an awful lot of people that do the training up at Great Lakes, and she says there's a lot of psychological problems with the people that they're training. Did you come across that, or did that happen, or did guys just quit, or what? How did that all work out?
Well, you got to keep in mind, Tom, that I came in at a different time, you know, and it was more acceptable to be in the armed services. And now, I'm not saying it's not, but there are certain... See, I have no idea how... I think the COVID generations have different problems, and that might be what Diane is referring to. But I have no idea on that one.
Okay? Well, she said that a lot of people get hurt in basic training, you know, and that hospital does both up there. It's a veterans hospital, and it serves as the hospital for Great Lakes.
Right,
which is kind of dual duty.
So if they get hurt, then they and if they can't continue their military service, they will generally get some sort of a discharge that hopefully won't hurt them in the public realm. I keep think, because you want either an honorable, and then there's a second category that's just below that that's also kind of an honorable discharge. But any other discharge, you don't want to have that on your record if you can avoid that.
Well, so if you go up there on your second day of training, you tear up a knee, what's that?
They will probably give them a medical discharge at that point, and that has to all be documented, and then they don't get then they can get treatment through the VA later on.
Okay. And the psychological stuff,
I'm bringing up an old TV program, but in MASH, Corporal Klinger, he was always going for, I think it was a Chapter 8 discharge, which meant, I'm going to use a crude term here, but, maybe a Looney Tune or something to that effect. So that's I believe the term was a Chapter 8 discharge, which meant that he had psychological problems, he or she had psychological problems, and they would get a discharge under that chapter of the system.
Would you care? I mean, I don't know, and for those that don't know, before Mike did any of this stuff, he actually went to economics class with me, so he knows stuff about economics, too. What the interaction, I mean, Kenny was... What did you make of what he was saying, Kevin? He was pretty cagey about not wanting to give any of that money to the VA. They wanted to operate totally separately in terms of the cash. And what did you make of that?
Well, go ahead, Kevin. I'm sorry.
Oh, you go, because I was about to say, I really didn't, I don't fully remember the conversation.
You guys, they raised $4.2 million, and they have a program, it's called Headstrong.
The Headstrong Project, said.
Yeah, and right. As a matter of fact, Mark was talking about how you need a budget, and Kenny was talking about the budget is, I think he said you meet with somebody weekly for a little bit, then monthly, and then every couple of months, and they want it to be a nine-month program. And Mark said, well, on paper, that makes a lot of sense, and maybe on balance that's what you can accomplish. He said, but individually, some people you can help out in a couple of months, and a couple of people it might be 2 years. I mean, it's not, you can't average people, but he said that's probably a really good start. But I guess Kenny, like two or three times, were you involved with the homes or the hospitals? He goes, well, we're involved, but we're not in there. We're not like giving them money to hire their guys. Our guys are sort of separate, and maybe this week he's going to be on to talk to Diana longer. I got the feeling that they were not the psychologists at the Fed, but then again, I have to doc. What do you make of all that? I mean, they're pretty cagey. It's almost like the...
Well, my reaction to that is it sounds like, what Kenny's talking about is that they want to customize the treatment to the need. And, I think often enough when you're talking about government, they're very much into the one-size-fits-all mode. So,
and I agree with Kevin on that, Tom. And I think really what Kenny's getting to is they're trying to fulfill that specific need. And if the money goes into the bureaucracy, then it'll get wasted on overhead. And they want to target their money to treating people and make sure it gets to treating people.
Well, so, it didn't sound like they were meeting them at the Veterans Hospital. That's what I got kind of.
Not at all. Yeah. They're just what Mark talked about. They're doing Zoom or direct FaceTime calls in order to do the telemedicine that Mark referred to.
Well, I
think further than that, Tom. We should ask that question for Kenny and Kenny said he'd get his wife on there. Because they're really the experts. So I'm just kind of speculating on what I think their motivation is on that. But, there's a good chance I could be wrong again.
One of the biggest yin and the yang was the Notre Dame Club of Chicago. I don't know if you guys knew this. Kevin probably does. It was the biggest club. I don't know if it still is. By far the most dominant club. But the only club that didn't just give all their money they raised to the university. So the university was never really happy with them, but they could not be happy with them because they were the biggest club. So it was to the point where our buddy Craig Fowler was one of the interviewees. Well, what they would do is once if a kid went to Notre Dame and found out from the Chicago area that maybe even if Notre Dame helped him out with the tuition and so forth, he still couldn't quite make it, the club here would maybe give the kid another $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 a year to put him over the top. And Notre Dame was always very pissed off at that. So finally they actually started, if they found out the club gave the kid $4,000, they'd pull back $4,000. So then it became even more hostile. And I don't know where it stands now.
But then you've got the federal, you've got FAFSA in that, you know, you have to do paperwork, and you know, it just gets I can see where the university would get a little upset about that, Tom. So
well, but I mean it's other people's dough. I mean, if somebody wanted to do it, I mean whatever.
No, I'm just, you're right, but
I'm saying there isn't always the connection that you would expect between Kenny's group wanting to help vets and, by the way, the Veterans Administration. Sometimes they're not on the same page in terms of give me your dough type of thing, right?
Well, and that's what kind of irritates me, and this is a personal thing. I love what, you know, Tunnels to Towers does and Wounded Warriors and all that, but, you know, to my mind, the VA should be doing all of that for any veteran, that particularly veterans that lose a limb. So it shouldn't always, we shouldn't have to have all these separate charities designed to help out veterans.
Well, would you, I don't know if you remember, but we got to dash here to Carl pretty quick, but Mike, I would like to have you back on kind of to talk about that. Maybe we'll do it with Kevin, because I brought that subject up yesterday, I don't know if you remember, with Andrew. I said, you know, you've got the federal government pulling back on food stamps, or we're not putting them out. And how many people, there's 41 million people that get, well, I guess they call it SNAP now, but it's food stamps. And there's another, like, millions of people that qualify for them and either don't know or are too proud to qualify for them. So, and you mentioned, Mike, there's people in the Army that qualify them, for God's sake. And but now you have the food depository feeding 200,000 meals a day. You have all these other people, and as money's pouring into charity, you almost get to the point where the minute somebody gives money to charity, the government pulls back, and you wonder, well, we're all paying taxes. I mean, I guess the interplay there, I can't give you the solution there, but there is an interplay there, right, Mike? Because you brought it up yesterday in a text.
Well, yes, there is an interplay, Tom, and what a lot of people don't realize is that the SNAP benefits, or, you know, some of our lower enlisted people need those SNAP benefits. And previously, when I was in, it was WIC, you know, the Women's Infant Program. They needed those in order to survive. You know, and in my mind, again, it's criminal that we have to supplement a soldier or a Marine or Navy or Air Force, whatever, their income in order for them to survive while they are serving their country. That should not be.
Well, I would agree. You're not getting any argument here. I mean,
right.
Of course, you know what? I guess you always have to ask the question, you know, to what level? I mean, if somebody's 18, joins the Army, and he's in there for 3 years and gets married somewhere along the line, yeah, you don't want the wife. But if a guy's in there 20 years and three kids are going to Notre Dame, well they're not going to pay enough for that. I mean, are they?
No, but and you, it's you know, you're at a certain income level where you qualify for the SNAP benefits, and once you exceed that income level, then you don't get the benefits. You know, that's the way the game is.
Well, let's listen to everybody next week and then maybe come in and kind of summarize the whole thing, maybe next Friday or whatever, because I think it's funny, and it leads into every other governmental program. Really, it's the same thing, isn't it?
It is kind of similar, and what both parties have done, but and now this is a bias. You have, and that's what DOGE was about, was kind of figuring out where this waste is, and there are numerous NGOs that have cropped up that are, you know, that people are using to funnel money into that eventually gets back to them or to a friend of theirs or whatever. And that's where I think Doge did a service to the nation, because they identified some of that, whether it's the cronyism or the, however you want to phrase it, the corruption within the government. So,
well, the question is, did they do that just for one side or for both?
Most of the time it's just for the one side, and it usually benefits them more so than anybody else. But
Mike,
that's
you
a
were
topic
on,
for another time.
Yeah, well, we got a dad, but you were on. I think you might have been on, but Kevin was. Where I read the story about the big contractor that got the cleanup money down in New Orleans after Katrina. It was some I don't remember what party he was, but some old line family or old line company. And they ended up, it was three subcontracts later, there was a guy with a truck and three illegals sweeping the street in New Orleans with the same. I mean, it was like, it had gotten sold so many. I mean, I don't think at least in World War II, if the three of us had a PT boat contract, maybe we got 5 or 10% more than we should have, but we didn't get enough to where we sold it to somebody else and didn't even do it. I mean,
there are books I've read where the same thing was going on in the Civil War, actually. People making uniforms and boots and things like that. Same system. Okay.
Well, people don't change. SP nope. Futures down 21, NASDAQ Futures down 150. You want to go right to Carl? Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Kevin. Kevin, you sound good, buddy.
Doing okay today.
Good. We have Carl?
You do.
Hey, what's up, bud?
Hey, I have the jobs number.
Oh, okay.
It's 42.
How'd you get this jobs number before 7:30?
Because I was given it. I have the magic thing. It's 42.
This is the one from the 2 days ago?
No, it's 42.
All right, it's not 7:30. Tell me how you got this number.
You didn't get the reference, did you?
Yeah, I did. Okay.
42.
All right. So what is that? Yeah, what does that mean for us?
42 is the calculated number from Deep Thought in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, God.
It's the answer to the ultimate question. It took 7.5 million years in order for it to come up with this.
Are we actually supposed to be getting a number today?
And then the follow-up was a clarifying question on that one. Another how many years?
It's why when I set that out last night, I was wondering if anybody, would be like, oh, wait, how the hell did you get that? Trump called me.
Everybody should read The Hitchhiker's Guide. It's a 5-book trilogy.
Yeah.
Think about that one for a minute and just take it on an airplane. It's, there is no flight where you couldn't polish off one of the books.
Yeah, it's kind of amusing. But I'll tell you, though, Chief, for how long, all right, so I, a couple things. That I think are kind of pertinent here. One of them is that just in the last few days, I was accused of, I don't know which podcast it was, probably yours, that I cited this, the BLS data related to the percentage, the huge delta in the non-institutional population, okay, which we've talked about quite a bit, right? That has no rational excuse other than, and by the way, that doesn't get revised per se, but the adjustment comes in every January, which
year it was pushing 3 million.
Well, it was plus 3 million, and the only rational explanation for that is that it is the people that the Biden administration paroled into the country. Okay. Because there is no possible way that 16 years ago, without anybody knowing about it, we had all the people in America decided to sleep with each other and make children. Nobody figured this out until January, right? So, I mean, that obviously is where it came from. All right, so that, and then from there, and the delta in the number of people who have been employed, along with the change in the not in labor force number, which we've been talking about a bunch too, because that's a huge problem from a standpoint of, and these are very well defined in terms of what is somebody that is NILF. That's very well defined. It's the non-institutional population, again, very well defined. It's 16 plus, not in a nursing home, not in prison. Okay. And not in labor force is not in labor force. You're not looking for work. You're not employed. You're not on unemployment. Okay.
But you may be looking for work. You're just not getting unemployment.
Well, you're not getting counted as unemployed. Okay. Now, whether you would like a job. Now, see, you know, they try to say, well, you know, these are job seekers that want a job. You know, they want a job. Yeah, right. We know what the BLS does for methodology because they tell us.
Yep.
Okay, and I take them at their word that basically if you're not on unemployment, you're not considered to be looking for a job. Oh, okay, that's BS. But, you know, hey, listen, at least they're consistent, right? I mean, as long as the data remains consistent, I can work with it and I can draw conclusions from it. It's when things... One of the reasons I don't do a Z1 analysis anymore, and I used to, which incidentally gave you an awful lot of information about credit flows and stuff like that, is that the Fed, back around the time of the crash in 08, and when Obama was elected and then moved all the student loan funding, they didn't just make a change going forward. They went back and reclassified the data.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, and when they did that, and they did it to me two or three times in a row, and finally, after like the second or third time, I think the CFPB was the other one that caused them to do it. When they did that, they destroyed my ability to keep continuity in my own data sets here, because I now have to guess, because of course...
Oh, it's like forgetting M1, I mean, the stuff they're doing in the money supply.
Well, yeah, it's the same kind of things they do with the money supply, right? So, I mean, at that point, I gave up on the analysis that I used to do. And it used to, it was a fairly poorly circulated article. I did it every quarter, and it made people's eyes glaze over. I don't know. But I thought there was an awful lot of very useful information in there. And it became impossible to you know, look at historical trends and say, well, you know, this kind of maps to this, we can sort of draw some conclusions from it, even though they may not be accurate. They're, you know, the best data you have is the data you've got. Anyway, I was accused of fabricating this, that I made a statement that wasn't actually in the BLS data, and so I shot back at them. I said, you're probably making the same mistake that my friend has made several times, which is you're not looking at table A1 after the break in the fold.
Yeah.
All right. Because if you're not, yeah, you're not going to find what I, you know, what I cited.
How do we?
That's where it is.
Well, how do we get? Matter of fact, I had a debate with Kenny a week ago regarding. He's talking about the unemployment rate is still low and everything must be pretty good. And I gently asked him. I said, it's sort of like. I don't know why we've been collectively brainwashed, Carl, into looking at the interest rate number instead of the money supply number.
But you know what's even worse? Tom McClellan just popped up with this thing last night. Okay, it's that the incoming contraction in the economy and economic activity is all the Fed's fault.
Well, I'm saying the Fed has been amazingly expansionary for 25 years.
Well, and you know what annoyed the living blankety blank out of me about that is that, so basically, you know, he's joined the chorus of screaming from the Trump administration that rates need to be zero, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you haven't noticed, the actual change in your grocery bill, I mean, I have all this data because I've got it going back more than 20 years for my own household because I track all of my expenses in Quicken. Okay? And I use my credit card at the grocery store, so it all gets picked up. And I do it, I pay it off every month, but I do it because I get 1% back. So, you can give me a 1% discount on everything for doing that, I'll do it. It buys me a little beer. It's not a lot of money, but still. And the reality is that over the last 4 or 5 years, what I eat hasn't changed. I made that change close to 15 years ago now, all right, which, as I talked about, changed my life from a health perspective. But since then, what goes in my basket is basically the same thing every week, right? I mean, you know, it's some kind of protein, whatever happens to be on sale. I really don't care what kind it is. If it had a face, I'll eat it. And, you know, and eggs and cheese and things like this. My bill's basically doubled.
Well, see, I'm
and people say it's 20%. No, it's not.
No, it's way more than that. But you're also when you're talking, the thing with when people talk about gas and they talk about food, obviously Everybody needs food, duh. I always try and put even a greater this all dovetails, Carl. We talk about the same thing, and all these different subjects keep pouring into my feeble brain here, but there's a big difference. I think food and gas, they can kind of go up and down because they're still fairly competitive. I'd say, you know, even oil, people think the big oil companies. The fact is, there's a bunch of them. I mean, there's way more oil companies than there are defense contractors, for God's sake. I mean, it's way more competitive, not even close. But you look at some of the processed stuff, anything, I mean, you'll see even like, you know, for the office once in a while, if I cook, I use the, you know, I mean, I don't like them as well as regular potatoes, but I'll use the instant mashed potatoes or something, and they were a buck for a little bag at Meijer's forever. Now they're $1.49 or $1.39. Well, that's
right.
That's never coming back. But you can find a sale on potatoes, you know, or you can go someplace and buy 10 pounds for, you know, not much dough. They go up and down because they're still competitive. But the other stuff, I mean, I don't see. If we go into somewhat of a recession, maybe the price of pork might come back down, but I don't see the price of a roof or a car coming down.
Well, I mean
there's a big difference. I mean, it's gonna, every industry is different in terms of people that have pricing power and people don't. And I don't think a potato farmer does or a corn farmer does, but I sure as hell think a, you know, Ford Motor Company sort of does, or the three or four of them together sort of do.
Well, Chief, one of the things that I have pointed out repeatedly, and this is, you know, we just got an example of this, okay? And you know, I mean, I know, you know, you're no fan of the president, and frankly, neither am I for that matter. I'm not a fan of the last president either, but, you know, I mean, so...
You know what, I hate to interrupt, but I'm gonna say the stuff you and I talk about, I mean, on the big levels, the unemployment, the monkeying with the numbers, the CPI... Yeah. All that stuff, I would say, we could go back to 2020 for sure. If you look at all the numbers, you can't tell who is president.
Well, yeah, and you're entirely fair in that, you know, in that assessment. What I'm pointing out here is that so, you know, I have said for a very long time, and it was one of the, in fact, it's. A huge section of the book I wrote in 2011 on the healthcare stuff is that if we enforced 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 and we actually got serious about it and we said, you know, look, you're either going to do this or you're going to go to jail, okay? because, by the way, the law already exists, so I don't need, you know, and it doesn't matter which party you are, not only do you not need Congress can't stop you. Because they could attempt to repeal that provision in 15 U.S.C.
You don't think Trump RX is the solution?
Well, now, this is where I'm going to, where I'm going with this, okay? So, what I have said since this started is that if you did this, the cost of care, the actual cost of getting whatever it is that's wrong with you fixed, okay, provided it can be fixed, or if not, it can at least be helped, would fall by 80%. And people have looked at me like I'm from Mars when I tell them this.
Kenny, because they're used to it. Okay.
I understand that, Chief. But you just saw it with what Trump just did.
Well,
you just saw an 80% reduction.
I know, but the man, well, in my opinion, all he did was point out what you and I talk about every week.
I understand that, but here's the point. He just got
okay, so
you said can't happen.
No, I never said it can't
happen. No, I'm saying the average man on the street who says, you're crazy. You couldn't possibly get that.
Well, you know why people say that?
No, do you know, well, Chief, do you know why he went there, though? Do you know why he specifically went in that place? Because I know exactly why he went exactly there.
There are 10 different drugs, and then Biden was going for 10 different ones. But, yeah, go ahead.
No, he went precisely there because in the last fiscal year, Medicare Part D spend on drugs was up 39%.
Yeah, I get it.
In 1 year. Okay? Now, and by the way, we're not talking about chicken feed either. We're over $100 billion. All right?
Well, that's why
that,
you're not...
On an exponentially expanding basis, in 2 or 3 years, the entire federal government fails if you don't stop that.
You're seeing what's happening on the Social Security side. One of my buddies showed me his thing.
Yeah.
Not that thing. His other thing is large. But
The
Medicare take back. And this is, you know, I think at some point, you know, you get to the point where you're insulting us kind of thing. And I don't know, you know, when you have a 2.6% increase in Social Security benefits and the Medicare Part B, which you pay for, when I say you pay for, they don't send you your Social Security check and expect
they
you to send them a check back.
Right.
They take it out. That's up 11%. So
right.
So how can you tell your population, by the way, the CPI that affects you is 2.6, but the one that affects up is 11? how do you not get 50 million old people walking down the street with a sandwich sign the next day?
I mean, it might not be a sandwich sign. It might be something a little less pleasant than that,
yeah.
You know? But that's one of the things that I keep looking at with this, and I'm like, you people are out of your blinkety-blinkety-blanking minds, right? But here's the thing that constantly gets to me with all of this. This is a solvable problem. Now, the problem with solving it is that if you solve it, then we have an instantaneous and very deep but temporary recession. All right? But here's the thing that I think is the most difficult for people to get their
arms around. I'm not so sure on that.
No, you would, because firing 15% of the people in the economy is going to
it would be okay, follow it through.
Let me finish it,
right.
because this is important. So everybody says you can't do that because you have all these people that are trained, blah, 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 blah. No, that is a lie, because physicians and nurses are not the people that get laid off.
No, it's the overhead.
It's the overhead. And by the way, collecting money and doing clerical kinds of things is not a field specific task. All right. So now you have a group of people who have a brain in their head. They're capable of driving a computer, because that's what they do all day, right?
Yeah.
They sit on the phone and they sit on the computer. They're capable of driving. They are the people that are very similar to the people that I used to hire to do customer service in my company. All right, you have to have a brain in your head. You have to be able to show up every day, sit at the desk, do the job. But I could take somebody who has a brain in their head and can sit at a computer, and I can train them to do the specifics of doing customer service for an internet firm. I mean, okay, yeah, I got a person on the floor. I got a manager that's got to sit there with you for the first few days, you know, and kind of keep an eye on you for a couple weeks. And at that point, you're pretty much up to speed. And then where you go from there depends on your own personal drive and how much effort you're willing to put into it. If you're just going to punch a clock, fine. You know, you get a paycheck, you go home. You want to go further than that, you want to rise up through the ranks. Okay, yeah, now you have to put some effort in. I had the person who wound up in an office as my customer service manager had no college degree and started working for me in that line job. And wound up as an executive.
Okay, but I mean,
it took her a couple years to do.
I know, but let's stick with the economic piece.
But here's the point:
you're talking about the changeover period.
Yes, and there would be a dislocation for that period of time.
Yes, but how? But I mean, just to follow it through, we're talking about a changeover period.
Yeah.
I want to get we'll probably have to do it after break, but because we're going to dig into exactly what you and I are going to the same place here, but we just have sort of different methods, because I think what happened yesterday, those same guys are now writing their prices up on any of their chemo drugs, and nobody's going to know. They're going to get the money back someplace, which is
well, they're certainly going to try, yeah. And that's why, as I said, this cannot be.
We need a solution from the start. When a drug first hits the pavement, how much can somebody charge?
Well, the drugs are a significant part of the problem. Okay,
well, they're getting to be a massive part of the problem when it's
it's accelerating faster than the others. Okay,
yeah, a chemo treatment can be $50,000.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like this thing that we talked about with what Scott Adams wants to use, right?
Okay, but let's before we wind her off, which we always do. What we're talking about is the time frame. Because if, for instance,
right,
somebody can go in tomorrow and take all these, I won't say all these drugs, but the drug probably, clearly the one I focus on, because a lot of my friends are on it, are Eliquis. That thing could be dropped from $7,500 a year to $2,000 or $1,500 tomorrow. And the guys are still going to make money, because I think it costs them like $300 to make. That's what I've read, but I don't know if it's true or not.
Well, the standard markup should be about five then.
Okay. Whatever it is, what I'm saying is, if Carl is correct and we somehow knock 50% off the overhead and all the other crap, which I think we probably could do, for God's sake.
The whole thing will come down by 80, okay, Chief, I'm telling
okay,
you.
Okay,
right,
but say, be nice to me here. Say it's 50. Now, immediate, but the problem is it won't be immediate. It should be immediate that a firm like PTI that's paying $2,500 a month for individual people's insurance, if all of a sudden next month that was $1,250 and we gave everybody another $1,250 in their check, all of a sudden that's a lot of dough.
It's
a lot of dough. So, I mean, we're talking about 168 million people employed times $1,000 a month. Holy
That's
bleep, not, Batman. I have to believe that these guys are going to get jobs real fast.
Well, Chief, that's going to be, first off, the economic rehoming of things that used to not be economic to do in the United States all of a sudden become economic,
yes,
to do in the United States is enormous, all right? And secondly, the offset to expenses, and therefore the benefit to the common person, especially at the lower end of the economic ladder, because, you know, I mean, you look at what this whole scream fest is about with the Obamacare stuff.
But for median income is like $40,000. That would be essentially a 30% raise for everybody.
That's right, and it would happen immediately.
Yeah,
and here's the thing. People look at everyone's like, you know, you look at what just happened just in the last couple of days. Okay?
Plus, your Medicare would get better because you could afford more doctors.
Well, actually, if you did what I recommended, what I wrote up, okay, Medicare just becomes an insurance provider. Medicaid goes away entirely. And the reason it goes away is because if you have no money at all, first off, the cost has come down dramatically. So most people can just write a check. But
you should be able to write a check for your physical.
You should be able to write a check for, yeah, almost anything. Okay, now there will be exceptions. All right, serious trauma, cancer.
Oh,
you know,
take dental insurance. If you have, you know, four root canals and need a bone transplant, you're not going to be able to pay for that. That should be insured. You should never insure your cleaning, for God's sake. It's so much more efficient to give the guy a check.
Here's the thing, though. The Crown, if the Crown was not a cartel operation, which today it is, it wouldn't be $4,000. It would be $500. And yes, you probably could pay for it.
Yeah.
All right. But the thing is that, because, by the way, I know how that little cartel game works because I actually had a former dentist explain it to me. It's controlled by the people that make the CNC milling machines that make those things in their offices. You have to use registered blanks that have barcodes on them, and you can't buy them from anybody else. Now
I
you know
say
why
most a lot of dentists have the machine.
Well, right, but the reason it's $4,000 is because the blank that goes in there that the
really?
Machine makes has to come from the company.
Why don't we just use gold? Of course, gold's up so high, that'd be hard too.
Well, I don't know that works anymore, right? But the thing is that the ceramics that they now use, the blanks that the machine uses, are a cartel. And this is the reason you get screwed. Because cartels screw people. Duh. Okay.
Well, I'm going to just lob this one in here before we got a minute. We were talking about the unemployment rate. And I was talking to Kenny about it. And he's looking. I said, Kenny, somewhere along the line, and I'm not going to accuse Kenny of being brainwashed. The guy's brilliant, for God's sake. But I said, you have to look at the total number, because if you go back to 2019, we had 157 million people working.
Yeah.
And we had 102 million people not working. Well, now we're up to 167 and 110. We almost, since then, it's almost 50-50 that are. You got to add those two columns together now, the people that are supposedly looking for work and those that supposedly aren't.
Because, well, no, I just, all I do is look at the employment population.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The number is so big, when you're talking about 110 million people group, to somehow magically, even with a little bit of system saying, it's okay because only seven of them are actually looking for work, that's not the number. The number, I think, has gone to what percentage of the people that are able
to work.
Well, it was
60, so in 1999... which is where my table starts, because the data that I used to have is...
See, now my table goes all the way back to 1990.
Well, but my personal Excel table.
Oh, all right.
Okay. And the
reason... The crummy table you always accuse me of using.
The one that I actually keep up by hand and have, and, you know, the prior to that was the property of the company, and therefore it went to the people that bought it. It's the way it works. If you're ethical.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, then I started keeping my own. So that was 60. The high point on that was 64.9, which was ticked a couple of times, including in early 2000.
Where were you?
2000.
I got it 64.4 and 99.
Well, it's 60. Well, it depends on which month you look at. But 64.9 in July of 99. And then it ticked 64.9 again in June of 2000, which, by the way, there is a cyclical...
Yeah, 2000, the end of 2000 was 64.4. It's the high on this chart.
Yeah, and so there you are. Okay, now you come down here and you look at the last one that we got, which, of course, was August, and we're at 59.6.
That's okay, that's a boatload of people.
Well, here's the thing. Every tick, every tenth in that number... is 600,000 jobs.
Yeah.
Okay? People are like, oh, that's not really that big of a difference. Oh, really? That is the entire fiscal sustainability side from a standpoint of those people who are paying taxes versus those people who are consuming them.
Well, some might not be. Some might be living, you know, just have a big 401k and sitting there. I mean, they're not consuming anything.
Well, okay, but you know what? Some people were doing that in 1999 too. All right,
I agree.
I'm just saying that when you look at the fiscal balance of the country, you find the truth in that one figure. If there's nothing else you pay any attention to,
well, even
a long-term trend basis, that's the number.
Even if you there's got to be a personal sense everybody has for this and say, okay, if 95% of the people are working and 5% of the people are sick or hurt or something, people are going to say, well, that's okay. The 95% can cover the 5, right? Sort of. But now it's 50-50, you go, wait a minute, I'm not so sure the 50 people working can cover the 50 people not working. And everybody has probably a number in their head of where this flips from being a real problem to maybe not as much of a problem. And I'm going to say my number is in the low 60s or maybe the mid 60s, and we're below that now, and it's got me very worried.
Well, yeah, and this is... But
I don't know why I picked the mid 60s, but to me that's...
But Chief, look at the reaction that came out of this on Tuesday, okay? What did the people do? And by the way, the media and the government drive this because nobody wants to actually take on these problems,
no.
Right? No one wants to take them on because, hey, guess what? You're going to have to gore somebody's ox, all right? Now, will it be of general benefit? Of course. Yes, it will. That's easy to prove mathematically. However, you're going to have to gore someone's ox, and those people scream. So what did they do? They voted for more free. And oh, by the way, you put an actual communist in as the mayor of New York. Now, the thing that it really makes me just chuckle at the idea of doing this with Ma'am Danny, in particular, the governor's races and stuff, and the New Jersey and Virginia, okay, those are important. But the thing that made me just laugh out loud with Ma'am Danny is that he has zero levers with which to raise the revenue as the mayor of New York. He can raise parking fines, okay? He could theoretically levy a tax on deed transfers within the city or something like this, okay? But these are small potatoes things,
well,
right?
I think he
does not have the ability to impose an income tax.
Well, we have we're going to break here, but I don't know much about the guy. All I'm going to say is the New Yorkers in the world are over the guy he beat.
Well, listen, the people that if you want to try to say, well, you know, that's a terrible thing. Oh, gee, so what were the alternatives? You're going to vote for a known creep.
Yeah.
Okay. Or who got forced out of office because he was a creep. Duh. Or the other alternative is a guy whose only claim to actual knowledge of anything is chasing bad guys on the subway.
Well,
give me a break.
The issue, I think people don't, we really don't know our way out of this. And you know what's even weirder is when you use the terms like communist. Who was on the other day that was reading, maybe it was just somebody telling me that they were reading all about, they were reading Karl Marx stuff like they'd never read it before. And that the terms he used for capitalist and communist, the terms have all changed. I mean, his idea of, you know, the bad capitalism is sort of exactly what we have now. Crony capitalism, right. Which with a few people getting all the, I don't think Karl Marx was, his view of communism almost was more of a competitive capitalism. It's not, I mean, I'm not a fan of Karl Marx, but people use these terms around, but all the definitions have sort of changed.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, it's like, the reality though is that it is, rather than take a look at this and say, okay, look, objectively speaking, the medical system is very good at trauma, okay, probably because we have so much practice in it.
This is a long time. Let's go to break. We didn't do the first break. SP Futures down 27. NASDAQ Futures down 160. Besides, we got a comment on that. Are we going to the crap hole here? We were up last night. What turned this? I
know what's going on.
Well, okay.
we'll go at that after the break.
All right, we'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low North Bank, Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 27. NASDAQ Futures down 156. Again, I had the NASDAQ up about 85 last night when I stopped watching whatever I was watching, some game. And now all of a sudden we've done a pretty good flip here. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 223. That's almost a full percent. The FTSE down 69, only 0.7%. CAC around down is not as bad, about 36.5%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 607. They had a big run up this week, and all of a sudden they've been going the other way pretty bad. Hang Seng down 244. That's a full percent. Shanghai down 10, only 0.2%. We've got the bonds unchanged at 4.09. Again, back up over 4, pretty good, but still not horrible or anything like that. The Bund unchanged, 266. Oil up 51 cents, 59.94. Up, down, right back to the 60 number, which we were doing for months at the 63 number. Now we're doing it at the 60 number. Brent up 46 cents, 63.85. We've got gold. A 1450 back over 4,000, going back and forth over this 4,000 number, 4,005 this morning. Silver up 52 cents, 48.47. Foreign exchange, which has been all over the place. Dollar is 115.65, or the euro is 115.65. Again, it's down from the 117 of a few weeks ago. British pound's the one that really has gotten whacked. It's down to 131 from the 135 it was. So there's been some definitely movement in the in that kind of stuff. Crypto. Hanging in at 100,000, 100,271, down 688. Ethereum, I keep getting the pronouncer maybe right, down another $67, 2%. That's been the one. We'll have to have Carl comment on that. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? Not much sports, Chicago last
morning, Chief. It's currently 7:40 here in Chicago, 49 degrees right now with a high of 63. Pretty breezy this morning, otherwise clouds breaking in for some sun tonight. Increasing clouds with a low of 45 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 60 degrees right now with a high of 86. Plenty of sunshine today, and tonight will be clear with a low of 59. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Unruh's, 14 minutes. We're looking at about 27 minutes. Edens from Lane Cook, 26 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, Dan Ryan from 95th, 26 minutes as well. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 28 minutes. The Suns beat Clippers yesterday, 115 to 102. And today we got Bulls at Bucks, 8 p.m. And the Broncos beat Raiders yesterday, 10 to 7. And this Sunday we have Giants at Bears at 1 p.m. and Cardinals at Seahawks at 4 or 5 p.m. Back to you guys.
So Carl, the sports news of the week, and people like you have done this to us. With all this social media.
I did it.
You did it. Guys like you did this, made a fortune, now left us with this mess. The Bears got this rookie end, right, receiver. He's pretty good. He's rolling at Dunze. He seems like a decent enough guy. Well, somehow or another, last Sunday, he doesn't get a ball thrown to him. Now, the Bears ended up winning in that crazy, crazy game. And his father, instead of just having a couple of beers with the boys at the bar and watching the game and saying whatever stupid stuff people say, drinking beers at the bar, watching the game, and having it end there, manages to put out on social media that if they're not going to throw the ball to his kid, they should trade him. So, of course, the thing catches fire. Like, who cares what's some guy dead? The thing has been the biggest news at Hallis Hall all week. How can we possibly be so stupid to focus on stuff like that? With something that belongs in the bar and never out of there. That's why you don't have microphones at your chair in the bar. I mean, it's, duh. I mean,
well, you know, people, yeah. nobody ever says anything dumb after they've had four or five beers,
no,
right?
What did the one guy on CNBC said? It should be a rule that after two drinks, you put your social media thing away or something.
Turn your phone off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least turn the microphone off so I can't listen. Because, by the way, all those apps, if you give them permission in the first place, and you don't, I have software that I run on my Android phone. One of the reasons I use Android is because, provided you are smart enough to understand how to do it, you can set it up so that the microphone and like the GPS and stuff like that are only on when you're actually using one of the things you want to have access to it. Other than that, they're actually off, and therefore you don't have that little I left it on by accident problem. Well, you know, people always tell me, I was talking with my buddy about, you know, about this, right? And then I go into Amazon, all of a sudden there's five ads for that, right? Yeah. It's like, yeah, you know how that happened? Facebook, X, Instagram, you know, all these things.
All right, so what's going on with the market this morning?
Okay, so what's going on here is this. People have finally paid attention. They're starting to pay attention to several things. You probably saw the thing from NVIDIA from their CEO saying that China is going to beat the United States in AI.
What is my fears about this guy? He reminds me of Harold Janine, for God's sake. He's starting to really bug me, this thing between him and China and Trump. And
this guy's a snake. Okay,
I think Trump's the odd man out there.
Well, I think Trump's not smart enough to be able to parse this stuff, which is unfortunate.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, he's a dirt pimp. Okay, when you get down to it, I mean, that's how he's made all his money, right? In the commercial space, but that, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
The problem that you have here is that, first off, the entire thing is a chimera and a scam. And the reason is that outside of the confined space of a training data set that is confined to, for example, your business's GL and AP and AR records, all right, which is a perfectly legitimate confined space, right? Or your utilization numbers as an ISP. I mean, if I turned an AI or some other data analysis tool on the utilization information coming off of my modem racks in the 1990s when everybody had to dial in, or Cub was to do it with the utilization data on the fiber connections, because of course they have this from their equipment. I have a nice little graph screen that shows the utilization, all the stuff I control. There, business insights, planning information, things like that, a lot of value, okay? A lot of value. Why? Because it's faster. And by the way, speed and accuracy, you know, there's money there. Okay. However, one piece of bad data in that information set, the more complex the model is, the smaller the percentage of BS has to be there in order to perturb the output to the point that it becomes worthless, because now a human has to check everything it does, because it will make it, it generates bad results. Now, they call these hallucinations, things that have no foundation in what was there. It's not a hallucination. It's the fact that no computer ever has or ever will have a bullshit filter, yet every two-year-old kid has one. Now, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, otherwise we would never make mistakes as humans, okay? And we make lots. However, we have one. My cat has one. A computer doesn't and never will. And so this is an unsolvable, my opinion, this is the same unsolvable problem that exists for quantum computing for the same reason. Quantum computers, the qubits, have an error rate. You can't, putting more of them together exponentially increases the damage risk on the output side because there's more of them, okay? Nobody has been able to fix this. And this is why, now, if someone does, all of the currently used encryption that we have on the internet today and everywhere else in business, it all becomes worthless in an afternoon, including all crypto, all right? But so far, nobody has shown any evidence that they can solve that problem. I don't think it's solvable. I may be wrong about this, but my opinion is it's not. The same thing's true with AI. And it's one of the things I pointed out when I was at this conference and was asked to, you know, be the business person in a room full of academics, all right? And I said, you've got two issues. One is you're stealing data to train this thing by the bushel, and there's a huge amount of legal trouble that's brewing around.
Yeah, they're just running all over anybody to start with.
Well, and the thing is, but eventually. This is you're going to start to lose cases here. Okay, I don't know when it's going to happen, but eventually it's going to, and that's going to be a very serious problem for the industry. But the second problem is that all this really is a much faster probabilistic data sieve. That's all it is, and that at its core is the issue. And what's being sold as is intelligence. It is not intelligence, and so you have Mr. Salesman over here, who has a very nice business with NVIDIA. And don't get me wrong, I use their products, okay? They make great graphics cards.
You know, I think that thing's, the stock's down $20 in the last few days.
Well, but they make great graphics cards, okay? The problem is they're a $20 stock selling graphics cards, okay? That's just where they are. All of this is based on this premise. And IBM said the quiet part out loud in a paper. You have a 10% capital requirement to build this thing out across your organization, and it returns 5.9 ROI. Oops.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay. By the way, the more you accelerate that, the faster you go bankrupt. Okay. I mean, you lose it. You're telling me that, and this is from a company that has, you know, it's basically pointing out the same thing I've been pointing out. Now, the other problem you have, and this one is equally serious and insolvable in our political and personal environment here in the United States.
Well, when you say, bring it down, I'll bring it to a is it possible, this discussion.
I spend $10 and make six. That's, I mean, dumb.
But is it possible in this crazy world we have now, and I don't know how much, you know, what we see on TV is actual. Is it possible, and I don't know that it is, but, you know, I'd love to see Trump surprise me. Is it possible for him to drag 10 guys from each side of the aisle to Camp David for the weekend and have a conversation like we're having right now? I don't think it is. And then if it is,
well, you could drag them there. However, they're going to lie. And unless...
I mean, and have a real... okay, guys, we're in our flannel shirts. Can we, let's talk. These are issues. Somehow, medical's one of them. This is one of them. Security's one of them. What are we doing about IBM? IBM feeding the Chinese for 20 years, all the stuff they're using to track down their own people. What are we going to do about this stuff? I mean,
Chief, you're.
I know. I'm on a cloud here.
I think you're looking at something that happens on the other end of a cataclysm if we're lucky and we don't get a Hitler out of it.
Well, you know who you just sounded like. There's a paper here someplace if I could find it. One of Nixon's daughters. One of them married Eisenhower's grandson, right, or something like that. But the other one married some guy who's in some think tank now. And I read a paper from his about 8 years ago, and they were talking about how why, with the budget problems we have, with this problems, why can't we get a solution?
Right.
And he said something to the effect that we haven't hit bottom yet. And you were on the air at the time, and I said, boy, I don't know if I want to see what that bottom is going to look like. And whenever you hit a bottom, there's no guarantee you're going to come back up the way you want to come back up.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm wondering, have we still not hit some sort of a bottom? I mean, this thing in New York tells me one thing. The citizenry is crying for help. They don't know where to go for it. Trump's the same way. Why would you? We're so disgusted with the rest of government. We're going to put this guy in here because he says he's going to do all this stuff with zero background to do anything like that. And yet, you know, and nowhere near the intelligence.
Well, not only that, he made all these promises the first time around. They didn't do it.
Well, okay, but I'm saying the promises are, yeah, we're looking at this big bureaucracy. We think our taxes are too high. Looks like a lot of people are making a lot of money, and I'm not. I mean, all the stuff that he talks about is absolutely true.
Yeah.
That's why he's there.
Right.
But now the question is, now I see why the guy got, you know, I think he got in less sinister than the guy in Chicago got in. Who got in because he was working for a huge union, and the union put him in. That's a real problem with me. At least I don't see that with the guy in New York.
I'm not saying
I would have voted for him or anything like that. I'm just saying people are crying for a change here. That's what is the message, loud and clear, right?
Well, that goes without saying, right?
And the response of the two parties is, let's give the few people that are making money even more money.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at what just happened with, you know, with Musk and this craziness with, you know, with the pay package. You know, the problem you have here is that, you know, this is also the guy who has said point blank that without the robo-taxi program being essentially displacing all existing taxi systems, okay, whether they be Uber, Lyft, conventional.
Hey, I got a question for it. You got to buy a medallion for one of those things, or they get to run free?
Well, good question. But you know, here's the thing. What he said is, without that, the company's insolvent within 5 years.
Well, now the message for me is, and again, this is, you know, Ricky, don't play the Mayberry song. When you buy a stock or a building or an asset, whatever it is.
Right.
And you could buy it when it looks like it's a plant coming out of the ground, but one day it's going to be a redwood tree or something. Whatever your view of the world is, and when you get in, I'm not talking about P/E ratios at the start, people have an idea, you have a vision. Someday, somewhere, you have to get to the point where my $1,000 investment in this place means that these guys are going to be making, you know, $80 every year and sending me a check for 40 or something.
Right, and none of that happens anymore.
None of that ever happens anymore. So what Tesla just told you yesterday is, no matter how much money, no matter how successful this place is, they're never going to send you a dime. And I'm not banking on stock price. That's totally different.
Right. You're talking about return on
capital. I'm talking about when am I going to get a check from this guy? And the answer is never.
Yeah, where's the dividend?
Yeah, the answer is no. Or the ability, I'm not talking about if you don't pay the dividend and a place stocks up cash, I don't like that. But at least then the company's got enough to where you can see the stock price going up, I'll use the term legitimately. But if you're not going to make any money, even a railroad, It's going to take me 10 years to build a damn thing. Okay, in 15 years, you're going to send me a check. Someday, somewhere.
You're going to get a check.
I'm going to get a check. And, well, these guys are telling you never.
So you got the, in the AI context, and the reason you're seeing the market start to take notice of this, and it's so far, it's around the edges. It's not going to stay there, Chief, and I've been warning about this for a while. The other thing that you heard out of NVIDIA is China's going to beat the United States. Well, there's two reasons, okay? One of them is they have he is angling for Trump to drop the constraints on him being able to sell chips into China, which is completely irrelevant because China's business model is to steal whatever it is in the way of intellectual property they need and then make it themselves because they don't want to pay anybody outside their firm and outside their control and outside their sphere of influence and therefore where they get their tax revenue and such from.
And why should they if you're them?
Well, but I'm saying they don't want to pay anybody. Yeah. And if they can find a way to not, they will, right? I mean,
they've been doing that since the ping pong diplomacy, for God's sake.
Absolutely. And they have screwed more. I mean, they've probably bought 5 copies of Microsoft software in the entire effing country.
Okay. And one Beatles album.
And one Beatles, exactly. Yeah. All right, so here's the thing. That's the first problem. And by the way, they have the internal technology to replicate because they have Huawei and, you know, these other guys, right? So it's there. The second issue, and the one that we refuse to solve, and they don't, and they have goaded us into this, all this green energy stuff, is, you know, hey, where's those solar panels made? Where are those lithium batteries made? Where is it? Da, 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 da. All made in China, right? What were the Chinese doing at the same time? They were putting up 500 coal-fired power plants. They are going to have the power available at a cost less than ours because they are willing to do that and eat the environmental damage, and we're not. And by the way, at the same time, they have influenced our policy to do things that are both more expensive and unreliable. And your data center has to work at 2 o'clock in the morning when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing. So therefore, you're going to have to build 3 times the nameplate capacity in wind and solar, plus another 1 times the nameplate capacity in storage.
Yep,
or
yeah.
The lights go off. Now, you're not going to live with that. Now, guess what? Can you build that infrastructure? Of course you can. But your power's 30 cents a kilowatt hour, and theirs is 5.
Okay, the three, they're not all the same, so I don't want to generalize, but there were 3 coal plants here in Chicago, legacy old plants. The one at Cermak here, it was, it could have been the most iconoclastic, I don't know if I pronounced it right, coal plant ever built. And the reason why, you probably know this, is the flywheel in the place was so big. This is the steam generated, flywheel generates the electricity. Carl knows more about this than me, but was actually the guy who used to run Commonwealth Edison and who bought up a bunch of places, and it was the singular reason why the Holding Company Act was put through during the Depression to stop this guy from buying other places. But
yeah,
so he was a total ass in a lot of ways, but he was not a dumb guy. The size of the flywheel, and if you go to the GE's headquarters, wherever the hell they are in New York someplace, you'll still see a piece of this, because the speed at which it was going, the outside of the flywheel was going to move faster than the speed of sound.
Right, which obviously is a problem.
Which is a problem. But so GE thought they couldn't make one that big. And he said, I'll pay for it. And if it doesn't work, I'll buy it anyway. Anyway, it did work. But there's that plant, and there was one over in Crawford, and there was one, I think, newer down right where the border between Illinois and Indiana. Somehow or another, Commonwealth Edison sold these plants to somebody else. And then kind of screwed them out of the deal. But they needed... and they probably weren't all the same. They needed, say, $100 million a plant to get compliant. Now, one of them's in a residential neighborhood, for God's sake. But they're to get compliant with the new air pollution stuff, and they elected to not do that, and they tore them all down.
They turned it off, right.
Which is a big deal, because when the stack came down, it put so much dirt in the neighborhood, that was a problem. But because the stack was so damn huge. Now, my question to you is, if they'd have put that money in there, how clean would that have made them?
Well, so there's this is the classic 80-20 problem, okay? And this is the squeeze that has been put on American industry and power production. It's been done very deliberately. The Chinese government has been a major proponent of this. They know they're lying. They don't care. It is entirely for competitive reasons to basically cause us and Europe, for that matter, to screw themselves. They are behind a great deal of the crap coming out of people who are too stupid, and that's not a derogatory way, it's just they don't have the chops. People like Greta Thunberg that have absolutely zero understanding of the physics behind any of this stuff. Okay, zero. And it's not that, you know, she may be a very nice young woman. I don't know. Maybe she was a very nice kid.
Be nice. The skill set needed to get into office, duh, is now not necessarily the skill set we want in the office.
Well, I'm not, you know, people will say, I think she was a useful tool. A lot of other people have been useful tools as opposed to actually having the chops to understand what they're talking about, okay? The problem at its core is this. There's two basic problems with coal and with any other hydrocarbon. The first one, first off, ignore carbon dioxide. It's garbage. Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. It's plant food.
Yep.
All right? So leave that off the table. But coal does have a serious issue, and that is that there is a trace amount of an element in there called thorium. Thorium is a heavy metal. It is also fertile, which means it can be bombarded with neutrons and turned into something that fissions. That makes it useful as a nuclear fuel. However, like most things that are in that group, it emits alpha particles. Same thing with uranium-238. This is why depleted uranium is so controversial, because you use it the reason you use it in a shell is because when it's finally divided, it's pyrophoric. It lights on fire all on its own. You don't have to light it. It lights on its own, okay, when it's a powder. This means that if you shoot a tank with it, the parts of the shell that get stripped off as it goes through the tank produces a lot of uranium-238 dust. That dust instantaneously flash ignites inside the tank and kills everybody in there. All right. So sets off all the ammunition and stuff that's inside it too.
Makes for a bad day.
If you get hit by that, it's a very bad day. But that's the reason that depleted uranium is such a useful munition. The problem is that uranium, like most heavy metals that are fertile, and U-238 is not fissile, but it's fertile, same as thorium, is an alpha emitter. Alpha particles are basically a helium nucleus. They are radioactive particles. However, because of their size, intact skin or a single piece of paper is enough to block them. So I can pick up a ball of this stuff in my hand and hold it. Nothing bad happens to me. If you, however, inhale the dust, you now allow that alpha emission to bombard actual living cells, because there's no barrier, because the interior of your lungs is alive. Okay, there isn't a dead skin layer over the top of that. That otherwise you wouldn't have any gas exchange. That causes lung cancer. And this is something that is a...
So the answer to the question is they still would have been somewhat pollutant.
Well, so basically this is where all the cleanup stuff, where the primary part of it came from, is you've got to keep the ash from getting out of the stack, okay? Because the ash, the thorium does not burn. It's a metal. The coal burns. The contained thorium ends up going out the stack. People inhale it. They get lung cancer. That's where the cancer problem comes from with using coal. Now, you can clean up that relatively inexpensively if you inject a great... This is why modern coal plants, or those that were retrofit in the first wave, produce all this steam out the exhaust. It looks like smoke. It's not. It's steam. And the reason is they spray a huge amount of water into that stack, which condenses all of the ash and stuff, and it falls.
That's what they do to the one by Lake Michigan over Michigan City. You can see.
Yeah, that's what what they're doing. Okay, that's what it is. It's steam. They spray water into there. It condenses all of the material into the bottom. You can get 95% of it. The last 5% is almost impossible. The last little bit is almost impossible. And that's where the ever-ratcheting tighter standards get to the point that that next 1% that you want makes the cost of the power that comes out of the plant so high that nobody will afford, nobody will pay for it. And so they shut it down. And this is a very deliberate act. Now, here's the thing. If we had gone down the road that China just announced they have started up, and by the way, they've been working on this for 10 years, and I've been talking about it for a lot longer than that, which is using the thorium as a nuclear fuel. You could take that, you could extract that from the coal because it's chemically distinct.
How about we talk about this on Tuesday since we're over time here?
Yeah, we're running out of time.
Is market to keep going down?
I think there is this. If this gets into people's minds that this entire thing is a con job, and I've been saying it is. You know, this is a bubble. It has no reality. It has no ROI. The problem is it has no ROI. It isn't that it doesn't necessarily quote unquote work. It's that it does not have a return on investment. If that gets into people's heads, this is not going to go down. You know, 50 handles a day. Well, it's going to go down 500 handles.
You know, it's like the cloud. It's a great thing, but it never returned what people thought it was going to.
Well, this is the basic problem, and I think you're at the start of something, and I don't think it's stoppable at this point.
Well, I've got some puts for everybody, so that part's good. SP futures down 30 now. Nasdaq futures up 158.
They're going to get a lot more expensive, yeah. By the way.
We're talking about a VIX over 20, so yeah, your puts are not cheap.
Carl, yeah, they're not cheap right now.
Have a good weekend, buddy. Talk to you on Tuesday. Nice job, Ricky. Everybody have a nice weekend. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.